Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for May the 14th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and hello to everybody out there. Hope everyone is doing well this evening. Tonight we have a special guest, Mike Partain. Mike previously appeared on our show on January the 8th and March the 5th. Mike is an expert on the subject of water contamination that occurred at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina between 1953 and 1987. Before we welcome Mike to the show, I want to remind our audience that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. Maybe you have a question for Mike about Camp Lejeune, or you want to tell us about your own experience with Camp Lejeune. You can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. As a reminder to those who may have heard our previous interview with Mike, or to those who are not familiar with Mike, he is a co-founder and public spokesman for an organization called The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. From 1953 until 1987, the base water supply for Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, was highly contaminated with industrial chemicals. For the past decade, he has served as a community representative to the estimated 1 million sailors, Marines, and their families potentially affected by the Camp Lejeune contamination. Much of the group's fight for justice was chronicled in the award-winning documentary Semper Fi, Always Faithful. So without further delay, I would like to welcome Mike, the Veterans News Hour. How are you tonight, Mike?
Doing well. Thank you for having me on the show, both Dave and Rich. I appreciate you being here. Let me be here again.
Well, we really appreciate you having you on the show. I know you're a busy guy, both with your day-to-day job and then what you do for the men and women who served at Camp Lejeune and were confronted with the water contamination. But before we get into some of these issues here, I know you are active with the Community Assistance Panel, or CAP, and you recently had a meeting. Can you tell us a little bit about what occurred at the meeting and any updates you want to make from the last show that you were on?
Yes, well, the CAP is the community face to the government, specifically ATSDR, which is the government agency that studies Superfund sites such as Camp Lejeune. We're community members. I'm independent. Jerry Insminger, he's been on the CAP the longest. He's a retired Master Sergeant Marine Corps. His little girl was conceived at Camp Lejeune and passed away at the age of 9 of leukemia. But once a year, we try to do a public outreach meeting. This year, our meeting was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we had about 150-160 Marines attend and family members attend the meeting. And the purpose of this public outreach meeting is for us to, in the community, to get out to different parts of the country and try to answer questions and provide information to the Marines and the personnel poison at the base. As you mentioned, this contamination wasn't just a single event. It went on for 1953 to 1987, and there's an estimated 1 million Marines and their families that were affected by this or exposed to this contamination during that time period.
Now, your own personal battle occurred when you were at Camp Lejeune, too.
And I'm sorry, you cut out, Richard.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, because that's how you got involved. Your story is actually kind of interesting.
My father, I'm not sure if we're cutting in or out or not, but my father was a Marine officer. I was conceived and born at the base between 1967 and 1968. And, you know, we lived in a place called Tarawa Terrace. When my father deployed to Vietnam, we moved off base, and that was my only contact with Lejeune. And it really didn't mean much to me until like 39 years later when out of the blue I was diagnosed with male breast cancer, which is extremely rare for a young man to develop a disease, especially a young man that does not drink, smoke, or have the genetic predisposition for the disease. Since my diagnosis, which was 11 years ago, we found 112 men that had the single commonality of male breast cancer and exposure to the contaminated water on the base.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, I know getting into some of the issues that you deal with the Camp Lejeune water contamination, and we talked about this the other night. The subject matter expert program, which I know is something that you've really been working hard at, and it was very interesting and actually pretty amazing when some of the things that you were talking to me about, and we're going to get into some of those issues. But why don't you explain what the subject matter expert program is before we get into kind of the nuts and bolts of it?
Well, we call it the SME program for short, you know, subject matter expert. It kind of, the backstory behind it is, early on we didn't have anything, and veterans were presenting claims for kidney cancer, bladder cancer, leukemia, male breast cancer to the VA, in order to receive medical treatment and, if need be, disability benefits. And in some cases, death benefits if the member passed away for their surviving spouse. Well, the first round of claims and stuff, we were using the internet. We were able to network together and look at, say kidney cancer, and we'd see the denials, and we would point out inconsistencies. And the result of which the VA consolidated all Camp Lejeune claims to Louisville, Kentucky. The next step in the process, in 2012, we were able to pass the Janie Insmiger Act into law through Congress, and this actually was the first step to providing recognition by the government that they had poisoned the Marines and their families. It provided provided limited health care for 15 medical conditions, but it didn't grant a presumptive status. And the difference being is, like, if you had kidney cancer and you served at Camp Lejeune, you could go to the VA and receive medical care. The next step occurred in last year in March, where we got the largest presumptive service connection for Camp Lejeune since Agent Orange. And that's kind of where this SME program comes into play even more so. There were 8 conditions that were granted for the presumptive service connection. And anyone that files a claim that is in not one of those 8 conditions, their claim is reviewed by a VA subject matter expert. In the past, this has been VA employees. And we've had issues with the training of these people, exactly what they were being told, what material they were using, and even their background. We found in one case that a VA doctor had been put in prison for molesting his children, and then reinstated his medical license and went to work for the VA. And we also found conflict of interest where some of these, one VA subject matter expert was providing medical opinions that would give benefits to veterans for Camp Lejeune on one end, and then she ran a consulting business on the other end, which provided defense and medical expertise to defend workman comp claims against the government and a private industry for toxic torts. So you had a conflict of interest. And the result in that was, in 2016, Jerry and I teamed up with the Yale Law School, and we filed a FOIA lawsuit seeking to get all the information and documentation about the program. So the SME program, which, you know, when you listen to the VA, it's presented as a way to review these claims and provide a medical opinion and something that's good for the veteran. And the actual results of the program, when it was implemented, the approval rate for Camp Lejeune went from a 25% approval rate down to about 5%. So, which, you know, when you think about it, it doesn't make sense, because the emerging science that led to the presumptive category was finding connections between trichloroethylene, tetrachloroethylene, benzene, and vinyl chloride, and, you know, kidney cancer, bladder cancer, leukemia, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But yet the SMEs were reducing the amount of approvals and saying that there was not a connection. So it was going against science. The meeting that we had two weeks ago in Pittsburgh, we had a new development where the VA has actually stepped out and hired private contractors. And this is part of the reason I wanted to be on the show tonight, because they've hired, as we know, three private contractors. We know the names of two of them, LHI Incorporated and QTC is the other one, where their private companies are using their private doctors to do these reviews for the VA and send the reports in. We have no idea who the doctors are until the veteran receives a letter from that company stating that they've been hired to do a medical review of their records. And the first doctor that we came across turned out to be a convicted felon.
Now, you were telling me the other night about one of the fellows who owns one of the companies and the contract that he got from the government to do these SMEs. Tell us a little bit about him.
Okay, I'm sorry, Rich. Which guy are you talking about?
One of the guys, they got a contract, you said, to do these SMEs. I mean, millions of dollars from the government to do these SMEs.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, these companies that are involved in this, they are involved in other work for the VA. Originally, these private companies started out doing C&P exams on behalf of the VA. And, you know, and poking around on the internet and doing some research, we found out that this contract that these three companies, I think it's three companies, don't quote me on it, but the contract that was out there was $6.3 billion. Over a five-year period to do CP exams and other medical exams for the VA. Now, apparently, this has been enlarged to include the subject matter expert reviews on behalf of Camp Lejeune. Now, keep in mind, this SME process that I'm talking about is unique to Camp Lejeune. They do not do it for Agent Orange. They don't do it for the Gulf War or any other environmental exposures that we're aware of. The program was created and is being tested with the Camp Lejeune population, which to me and to Jerry and to others, that amounts to a form of discrimination. Why are we being selected out for this? The VA is kind of stacking the deck against the veteran because they are providing their own medical review at their cost to counteract anything the veteran may have to say or any notes or a nexus letter, and in order for the veteran to do something comparable, they're going to have to go and hire their own subject matter expert and have them write a report, and that's going to cost thousands of dollars to do, which is something that, you know, when you're sick and, you know, especially with cancer, you know, it's not a poor man's disease. You don't have those type of resources available to you.
So wouldn't you say, and wouldn't you agree that the fear of the government is that if this could be opening up a whole can of worms, and you know, we're not talking thousands, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of veterans and their families who are exposed to the water contamination at Camp Lejeune. So it sounds to me like it's just like everything else, they're trying to put a seal on this thing.
Yeah, well, I can't speak for the government and what the government fears. And I can tell you for a fact is that, you know, DOD, Department of Defense, you know, they acted irresponsibly at Lejeune and other bases. Camp Lejeune is unique in the fact that we have documented pathways where these chemicals were disposed of and reached the aquifer and poisoned the Marines and their families and the civilian employees on the base. So why are we arguing over, you know, whether or not it harmed us? I mean, the science is there. And, I mean, the government has gone so far as to side with a private polluter in North Carolina in order to gain an exemption to protect themselves against lawsuits against for Camp Lejeune from the families. Because, the VA is the, you realize that the VA, as Jerry says, is the garbage can for the Department of Defense. When the veterans used up and there's nothing useful in there, they go to the VA. And until the VA is, the Department of Defense is held accountable for things, you know, what they're doing in the environment and testing and things like that, you're going to have this problem. And, you know, these families and these veterans serve their country with a belief that they're doing something good for the country. And when this boils down to is, in the end, who would stand up to serve their country if they knew that they were going to be poisoned by their country, and not only them, their families, and then they had their backs turned against them? I mean, that's, you know, it's unthinkable.
Now, I know earlier in the show you mentioned about trying to get the Camp Lejeune veterans who have filed claims to notify you when they might get an SME letter. And you talked about the importance of, it's almost like a rallying cry to other veterans who are subject to this water contamination at Camp Lejeune to get on board. I know you have a Facebook. What's the Facebook page? If maybe anyone's listening that this applies to, they can.
The Facebook page is Camp Lejeune Toxic Water Survivors. And then the internet page is the few, the proud, the forgotten. Now, one thing you got to consider, you know, I've thrown out the number a million Marines and their families, and that came from ATSDR, the government agency who conducted the studies at Camp Lejeune, both the health studies and the water modeling, which showed the extent of the contamination. Now, you know, Camp Lejeune is my birthplace, and my birth certificate says Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, Onslow County. But Camp Lejeune is not my hometown. Winter Haven, Florida is where I grew up. That's where I go home for Christmas. I see my family, my friends. That's where I'm from. And that's true for a lot of the Marines and their families. Camp Lejeune was just a way station, a point that they were at for several years. Some families over 10 years, some 2 years, and some even less. And we are scattered out all over the country. And when I mentioned about the letters, like this SME review letter, we don't know who our community is until people come to us. And I'll give you a good example. That Pittsburgh meeting that I mentioned, I got home Saturday night from the meeting. Sunday afternoon, I had a text message on Facebook from one of the families who had attended the meeting from Ohio. And when they returned home, they had a letter from this company called LHI stating that they were going to conduct a medical review. Now, one thing I will point out, the LHI does do CMP exams, and this letter that's being sent out is not a CMP exam. It is. The doctor never meets with you. They never touch you. They never see you. They have no idea who you are other than what is written on the records. So that person reached out to me because during the meeting, I had told, you know, people were asking questions during the question and answer session, and I had said that you need to question what's going on. Ask questions of who the doctor is. Find out their backgrounds, who they work for. And this person took it upon themselves to do that very thing. And she was also aided. The veteran's wife is a nurse and works in the medical field. And she was able to, you know, look this person up and find their medical license. And they had been convicted for 7 counts of tax evasion, put into prison for a year, and is actually currently under probation. And that person is actually doing reviews, or was doing reviews, because my understanding they've been pulled off medical reviews for this company on behalf of the VA. How the hell that happened? Wow. I mean, that to me is just that's a crime in itself.
A slight conflict of interest, I would say. Wouldn't you, David?
Yeah, I would. I've got a question just to kind of clarify things, if I could, Richard.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mike, when you're talking about the subject matter experts, and then you mentioned that the presumptive list of 8 cancers and other diseases that went into effect last year, are you finding that the subject matter expert program, or let me phrase it this way, how much are you finding the subject matter expert program is being used by the VA for conditions that are on that list as opposed to conditions which are not on that list but might be on the longer list for healthcare purposes?
Well, the whole purpose of a presumptive category and the 8 conditions that have been announced as presumptive for Camp Lejeune is so that they do not have to undergo these reviews. Basically, with the presumptive category, you show that you're at Camp Lejeune for a minimum of 30 days, and you have a disease that is listed on the program, and that you have, you know, you're not dishonorably discharged, and then that's it. You go through
the
process.
Here's my question, though, Mike, because the regulation says that it's a rebuttable presumption. It's rebuttable, and maybe the program is still somewhat new. But I'm just wondering if maybe from your perspective, if you've heard of many cases where the VA is being very aggressive in trying to rebut that presumption in a particular veteran's case by pointing to other causes of their cancer rather than the Lejeune exposure, and if so, are they using the subject matter expert program for that purpose? I'm just wondering maybe what your experience is or what you've heard about.
Well, that is interesting because I was not aware that the presumptive was a rebuttable presumptive. And that would
the regulation does say, I have it in front of me here, it's section 3.309, that there's rebuttable there's rebuttable presumption provisions, and I'm wondering, from my experience anecdotally, I've not seen cases where the VA has been aggressive in trying to rebut that by saying, let's say that particular veteran really wasn't exposed, even though they're at Lejeune, or maybe that their conditions weren't caused by that exposure. And that's what I was just wondering. So it sounds like really there isn't, you haven't seen much of that.
Well, actually, not to interrupt you, Dave, but that possibly explains what we saw with the gentleman that appeared. He actually flew in from Washington, the state of Washington.
Yes.
He has kidney cancer, and they had denied his claim. And I'm curious now if that's what we're looking at, because he had, I don't remember for sure, but I believe he had either 4 or 6 nexus letters, from highly trained physicians that linked his cancer, and the Camp Lejeune SME, there was an SME review done upon it, and they were dragging out his claim. So I'm going to have to go back and look at that with what you've told me. Matter of fact, I know offline, if you could send me that section, I would appreciate that. I was not aware of that.
Right. Well,
even with the rebuttable presumption, if a veteran does in fact have a supporting medical nexus letter, then we get into the issue of the burden of proof, and it's as likely as not, which is 50-50, tie goes to the runner. In that case, it still should fall in favor of the veteran, as I see it.
Glad you brought that up, because that is a sore point that we have had with the VA. We've seen time and time again where the veteran has a nexus letter that is written by a board-certified oncologist, by a department chair at a university that specializes in a particular form of cancer. And those letters have been ignored, not mentioned in the file. My understanding, you know, I had a conversation with one of the VA officials, and they said, well, the SMEs aren't looking at that because that's the veteran's medical opinion. We're writing our own medical opinion. And to that note, we've actually seen some DROs, decision review officers, once they get the SME report back in, they will write the physician who wrote the Nexus letter and demand a comparable report be written up to explain how they came to their conclusion, which, in fairness, you know, to the veteran, you know, when the physician writes their Nexus letter, they're not doing a research paper like the SMEs are doing, and they're not being paid for it. And for the VA to come back and demand that type of work be done uncompensated is not fair to the veteran. And it's being used against the veteran, because what happens is the decision review officer will come back and say, the SME is better trained, has a more thorough report and rationale for why their cancer is not service-connected than the veteran's attending physician, and they'll just ignore the Nexus letter and deny the claim. We've seen that quite a bit.
But then this gets to your point, trying to identify who these SMEs are.
Yes.
Because if we're just, you know, if the DROs relying on face value that this SME is in fact competent and has the expertise to issue that letter.
Well, that goes back to
the
VA.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Rich. I don't mean to overtalk you, but you're very faint on my end. I can barely hear you. But that goes back to what I was saying, you know, with the SMEs. The VA's front on the SMEs is that, you know, we're training them. They're highly skilled. And what we're finding is a lot of times they're, you know, family physicians. They're medical occupational specialists. They're not necessarily board certified in anything. And from some of the FOIA lawsuit documents that we've gotten back, we found out that they go to a 2-week intensive training class. Now, how 2 weeks of intensive training can overturn an opinion written by an oncologist who's been practicing for 20 years, I don't know. But
right.
The other part of it is, you know, some of these, we have one SME that actually cut and pasted parts of Wikipedia and changed the wording to support his denial of the veteran's condition. And then when the VA was pressed on, because we took this to the media, when the media pressed upon the VA what was going on, they did not deny that they did it, and said basically that, you know, all forms of information are acceptable, including Wikipedia. And, you know, Rick and Dave, I'm currently working on my master's program in history and for my degree. And let me tell you, if I cut and pasted Wikipedia in one of my papers, not only would I be laughed out of the room, I'd be expelled from the school.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I see that in my own experience as a college level instructor. Yeah, so... I guess one concern that I had, which I've already expressed, would be to what extent the VA might have already been or might become aggressive in attempting, in a specific case, despite the presumption, but to attempt to rebut it. And then the other question, which is changing the subject a little bit, would be, as you well know, the presumptive list for disability claims only has 8 conditions, whereas the statute passed by Congress in 2012 had a much longer list, I believe, of 15 conditions for health care coverage. And, you know, trying to maybe get a sense of where things may be going, because I remember, you know, media reports by some journalists in the Tampa Bay area back a number of years ago when they were first reporting Lejeune, and it was focusing on the high rate of male breast cancer, which ended up on, you know, on in the 2012 law for coverage of health care, but then it did not end up on the list of eight for claims, for disability claims. I'm just kind of perplexed about that, and maybe get your thoughts on where you think things may be going as far as the differences between the two lists.
Yes, well, to answer your question, the male breast cancer issue, and this kind of will answer some of the other bigger questions you asked. The problem with male breast cancer is that it is an extremely rare disease. There are not a lot of cases. To give you an idea, out of 235,000 cases of breast cancer that are diagnosed yearly, roughly 2,000, just under 2,000 are men. So, and that's an older statistic that I haven't kept up with the current rates, but it is extremely rare. It's typically a disease that strikes older men that are 70 years of age and older, that have a history of the disease in the family, and also Eastern European Jewish descent. Those are the biggest risk factors. But the problem is there are not a lot of occupational studies or even studies involving exposure to organic solvents such as TCPC and its links to breast cancer. When there have been other contamination sites with TCPC that have had male breast cancer show up, usually it's a handful, three, four, but there's never enough to study. Whereas when you look at kidney cancer and leukemia, those show up in quite in much larger numbers compared to male breast cancer, but there's enough of those numbers to study. So that's the big problem why male breast cancer wasn't on the final list, is because the medical science that's out there isn't enough to say yes or no. And when we got the presumptive category, there was a lot of pushback. You know, the VA was afraid that, you know, like one of the VA officials named Brad Floor kept referring to toe fungus, saying the veteran put a claim for toe fungus. And, you know, basically, how do we tell the difference? And I finally got sick of hearing him saying that. I said that, you know, having cancer is not the same thing as having toe fungus. And, right. But that has been a pushback from the VA. You know, where do you draw the line? So when these presumptives were created, you know, they were going back to science and seeing what was out in the medical literature to strongly associate a particular condition with exposure to the solvents. One of the answers that we're going to see is going to come from a first of its kind called cancer incidence study that ATFDR is performing on the Camp Lejeune population. You know, male breast cancer is survivable, thankfully. I'm an 11-year survivor now. But the past studies looked at mortality. And the thing is, a lot of cancers are more survivable today than they were 10, 15 years ago. So hopefully when we get our cancer incident study complete, we're going to be able to see all the other cancers because the study is looking at the incidence of cancer, not whether you died of the cancer. And hopefully that's going to answer that question you asked. Why is this on and this one's not? Things like male breast cancer, esophageal cancer, you know, we're seeing thyroid cancer on the base. There's just not enough linkage between the medical evidence and the disease to the solvents to say yay or nay. Does that make sense?
Wasn't it also, as I understand, we had Jerry on the show, and Jerry said, you know, when you do this legislation, you got to compromise. And,
yes.
You know, so you get to the table, and you may have, you know, 12, 15 that you want, on the list. And the other side says, well, we're not going to go with your 12 or 15. We got six. So as Jerry kind of said it, you know, by the end of the day, you wanted to walk away with something.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing happened with Agent Orange. I mean, Agent Orange encompasses a huge swath of medical conditions now. But when you first looked at Agent Orange, they were only accepting a few conditions. It took science and medical research. I mean, now that we have Camp Lejeune on the table and an association between exposure to the stuff and adverse health effects, you know, hopefully the medical community and science are going to follow suit and start looking at this in a closer light so they can start answering the questions, well, is male breast cancer caused by exposure to organic solvents? My answer is yes. I mean, Camp Lejeune, you've got 112 men that have that commonality. It's the largest male breast cancer cluster that's ever been identified, but there's only been one study done on it. And that was from ATSDR, and they did find an association between an early onset of male breast cancer and exposure to the marine population on the base.
Wow. I know we're getting kind of close to the end here, but I wanted to switch gears here and just kind of get your opinion. You know, you've been going up to D.C., and I know you talked to a lot of different staff people up there with the VA. You know, as you know, we currently do not have a VA secretary. And to what extent, from your personal situation dealing with the people in D.C., is that becoming a problem?
Well, the problem that we've been dealing with, the main problem with the VA has been, you know, the head not knowing what the body's doing. And in the case of Camp Lejeune, you have this SME program that was developed internally within the VA. It wasn't from the top down. It was kind of like from middle management up. And no one was overseeing them. No one was asking questions. I mean, this whole SME program that we discussed earlier has never been approved by Congress, but yet it's in place, and they're using it to make decisions on whether a veteran gets benefits or not, which to me, there's something inherently wrong with that. But, you know, yeah, we've got an agency with no direct, no head right now. And they need to get somebody in place. I mean, Congress needs to work with the White House and get somebody who's qualified in there and is not just going to sit there in the chair and rubber stamp things, but get in there and start rooting out what's wrong with the agency and get it back on track. You know, they have an interim secretary in there now, and he appears to be doing a good job. I mean, he's trying to get things done. We've gotten some feedback from the VA over this issue. Like, for example, the contractor that had the tax evasion conviction, well, my understanding is that she will not be doing any medical reviews on veterans' claims. They yanked her on that. And you know, there's things happening. So find somebody and get them seated.
Right. Now your organization that you're actively involved with, have you guys expressed an opinion as to who you'd like to see put in that seat? I know the VS, not the VS, the Legion and other organizations tend to offer their opinion. Has your organization made any sort of opinion on that?
Well, if you were to ask me personally, here's what I would say. Secretary McDonald, Secretary Shelkin were both very aware of Camp Lejeune. They knew we were out there. They saw us in the media. At no time did we get feedback or any type of involvement from the secretary. And the fact that, you know, we raised this stuff about the convicted felon, and we heard back that, you know, we didn't hear back from the secretary, but, you know, we heard back from the VA that they did action within a day or two of it. So I think that is a good sign. But I would say, you know, the man that's in there now, give him a chance. Let him do his thing. And, you know, if he wants to do the job, let him be there.
That's Wilkie, right?
Yes, Wilkie, Acting Secretary Wilkie.
Yeah. David, do you have anything else?
Well, I just wanted Mike for you to please give our listeners another opportunity to know where they can find out more about your organization and also to help your cause if they're so inclined.
Yeah. Well, the main thing now is anyone that's listening, if you receive a letter from these VA contractors that are, they will identify the doctor's name and the doctor's medical license on the letter. And also, more importantly, in the body of the letter, they'll say that they're doing a medical review of your records. If you receive a letter like that, I would like to get a copy of that letter. You can reach us on the Camp Lejeune Toxic Water Survivors Facebook page or through the email on the Few, the Proud, the Forgotten. Because, you know, we're trying to see who these people are. And going back to one of Richard's points earlier, part of the reason we filed this FOIA lawsuit is because we don't know who these people are. The VA will not reveal their names. The ones that we have found have been through veterans contacting us and giving us, you know, their decision and finding the SME's name in the decision. Now, with this contracted review, the SME's name, I don't think it's going to appear in the decision. It's going to be just a paper, and it's going to be this letter that they get. So, you know, we're asking, if you get one of these letters, please contact us, let us know, so we can check out the doctor and see where they're at. Because I'm sure, you know, we had the very first one that we had come back was a convicted felon. And if you think about it, it kind of says measure about the program. If, you know, the doctors that they're hiring to do their dirty work here are convicted felons.
I know I wouldn't be able to practice law if I was a convicted felon.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is this the only type of people they can find to do the job? Does that say, you know, to me that says measures about the program itself.
So they're just trying to rubber stamp, you know, this is my opinion, they're just trying to rubber stamp this stuff, try to minimize, suppress these claims, to avoid having to pay the compensation. Because in my opinion, you know, having done this for a number of years now, it's all about the money. Just follow the money. And the government doesn't want to spend the money on the veteran. And so anything that they can do to shoot the veteran down, use the metaphor, they're going to do it. As one of my clients said to me, who fought in Vietnam, I thought the Viet Cong was going to be the hardest enemy I ever had to fight against. And then I found out when I got home that it's my own government. So what's going on with the SME program is just another example of the crap that the veteran has to put up with.
And they shouldn't. There's no excuse for it. I mean, these veterans and their families did not ask to be poisoned by their government. And, you know, we were. And we should not be begging and clawing and screaming and scratching to get, you know, what to do. I mean, a lot of these people, I mean, you got to understand with cancer, you know, I was fortunate. Breast cancer, I don't need two breasts. And as long as it stayed there, I was fine. But you get kidney cancer, leukemia, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, thyroid cancer, esophageal cancer. You don't survive long without those organs. Or, you know, if it gets into other organs, such in the case of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or leukemia. And, you know, even with the cancers that are survivable, you're always under that gun. And cancer is not a poor man's disease. So for the government to set up a program that is basically, you know, defending the government so that they, you know, these environmental exposure claims are not properly handled, I mean, that's a problem. And the other thing to think about is if they're doing it to the Camp Lejeune veterans, because the contamination at Camp Lejeune is supposedly over. This is a period in time between 1953 and 1987. That time might change because there's some studies we're trying to get through with ATSDR. But the point is, what about the other veterans, the ones that are out fighting in the Gulf now, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Africa? You know, if they're exposed to depleted uranium, are they going to have to face their own SMEs in the future?
Well, you have that with the burn pit.
But you also have that with quite a few other military installations where there has been contamination. Camp Lejeune has received the most publicity, or a lot more publicity than a lot of other installations. But there's quite a few military bases. We had on our show last July Gavin Smith of the group called Civilian Exposure. And you know, he was talking about two other additional bases. Obviously, he was focused on Camp Lejeune, but I think that's going to be another issue. The burn pits, big issue. So, Mike, we really appreciate you being on our show once again, and I hope you'll be back with us to keep us posted.
I will. I'll be glad to come back anytime.
Good job, Mike. I really appreciate you on the show and everything you're doing for the Camp Lejeune veterans and veterans in general. You guys do such a wonderful job. Thanks very much.
Yes.
Are you welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
And one last thing, Dave. There's 132 military installations that are currently on the Superfund list with the EPA.
Wow. That's just incredible. Yeah. So I applaud your work. And hope you'll be back on our show in the future. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, good night. Thanks,
take
Mike.
Take care, Mike.
Y'all take care, too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, that was another dose full, huh?
Yeah, another very informative show. Really appreciate Mike being on our show. And like I say, hopefully he'll be back. Keep us up to date as things progress on that issue, and as he said, I mean, the over 100 other military installations that have toxic contamination issues. It highlights, really, in human terms, you know, the impact of environmental pollution and
right,
you know, responsibility, accountability, those kinds of things. But well, another great issue. Thanks. So, Rick, why don't we go to our Coaching into Care program and then wrap up for tonight.
Okay. Our Coaching into Care, we'd like to provide with our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about this program. As David said, Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veterans. Give the program a call. Call free at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. And on that note, I'd like to just mention, before we came on the show, I had a client come into the office. And he himself is an Iraqi Afghanistan veteran, and he served with what he said it was his best friend, and they were, as he told me tonight, we were twins in armor together. Well, apparently this young man, obviously not my client, was struggling, and he had moved away from the area, and my client had been keeping in touch with him, and yeah, they've been talking quite regularly. Well, 2 days ago, one of the relatives called my client and told him that, this young man had taken his life.
Oh, no.
And my client said to me, you know, Mr. Hurley, you hear about the 22, and the 22 is reference to the statistic that there are 22 veterans committing suicide every day. And he said, you know, you kind of, you hear that number and you hear about veterans committing suicide, but until it happens right in front of you, you know, it just doesn't kick in. He goes, I just kind of, our client, David, he also has depression and anxiety, and he's only getting a 50% rating right now from the VA, and we're seeking to increase that as well as to other disabilities. But you could tell when he was talking, he just was stone cold thinking, this happens to other people. This doesn't happen to me. Well, he finally said, you know, it did happen to me. My best friend, my twin, my armor and buddy, took his life. and no one had any idea that this was going to happen.
Right.
He had spoken to his buddy a few days before. Didn't come up once. In fact, the fellow was committed suicide. He was talking about things in his life going forward. So it caught this veteran very much by surprise, and that's why it's so important for anyone who's listening to this to take this seriously. And if you do know a veteran who is in crisis, that number again is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Even if you end up erring on the side of helping this veteran and maybe he doesn't really need the help, but you think somehow he could benefit, make the call, reach out, because we don't need these veterans committing suicide. Back to you, David.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. It's been another quick hour tonight. It's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We'd also like to invite you listeners to become show guests in the future, as well as sponsors and advertisers of our program. Our contact information is on the show's website, which is bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. You can also find archived podcasts of our prior shows for your benefit. Please tune in next week, same time, same station. Our guest next week will be Mr. Adel Travioso of a group called Green Veterans, an organization in South Florida which helps veterans make the transition from active duty to civilian life while also getting them employed in jobs that help promote the environment. This Friday, I'm also going to be interviewing the director of the Arizona Department of Veterans Services, Wanda Wright, and hopefully her interview will also air next week. But please stay tuned, same time, same station, next week for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night and be safe.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.